What are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You've got Tom and Lotus. I'm Tom. That's Lotus. You know how this works. We've been doing this for a long time. It's true. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the live stream. People, pop it in for the live stream. We're so glad that you guys are here. We are diving back down deeper into the iceberg this week, and we've got some topics that are actually fairly common, or at least common for us, in things that we've discussed over the years, and they come up now and again. But we're going to go back over some of these details and some other things as well. So this should be a good one. Lotus, you ready to dive back into this iceberg?
Yeah, no, it's been unseasonably warm here all of a sudden. Summer hit all at once in New England. So you know what? Let's dive into the icy cold waters again. That's fine.
Let's chill the drink a little bit.
Yeah, it was 104 the other day here.
Oh my God. Oh, what the heck?
New England is all over the place. And today is 60.
So. Yeah. Which Daedric Prince did you piss off?
All of them, apparently.
All of them. Yeah. Sounds about right. But here, let's get into it. We are up to entry 39. On the iceberg list, and this one is simply titled Aeliads, like, you know, the race of elves that used to, well, control Cyrodiil. And this was pretty simple. We talk about Aeliads, they come up all the time. Is there anything that comes to mind when you think of Aeliads that is worth discussing here?
Oppression? Oh wait, no.
Gut gardens.
No, it's one of these situations where whenever I hear the Aeliads, it's just like one of those scenarios where you don't really experience this. We're going to tell you stories of when they existed.
Mm-hmm. Or you travel back in time and get little glimpses of things
and
in ESO.
You get to see them. It's very Dwemer-esque, but from the other side of the spectrum, I feel.
Right.
And they have a lot of mystery to them, maybe a little less than some of the others, but it's just... They strike me so much as a creation story type of deal because they're so far back compared to some of the other races and the progenitors of some of those races. So it's kind of interesting because you don't really ever interact with them, but you interact with what they've done and what they've created and their legacy that sort of has trickled down from their right. existence.
Right. So they disappeared, sometime during the Mirthic era?
Yeah.
They, for the most part, disappeared.
For the most part. I mean, you'll bump into them here and there and stuff like that. So it's rarely are things 100% gone.
Right. That's true. But just for overview reasons, you have the elves, they migrate to Tamriel from the island that the Aldmer were from, right? So the Aldmer migrate over, and then they become the Altmer, and then they, during that period, in the early Mirthic era, they seem to have explored large parts of the continent, and sections of the Aldmer / Altmer break off and settle different places. So you have the Kymer, who go up to the areas that are now Morrowind, and you have the Aeliads, who settle in the central part, which is now Cyrodiil. Right. And the Aeliads are basically Altmer, but more evil. Is that a bet?
Yes, they seem to be kind of more evil for the most part. Maybe a bit more magically inclined, even though in general you'll have Altmer considered, you know, one of the most magically inclined races. But it seems like oftentimes that they may be a reduced version of what the Altmer were.
Mm-hmm. The Aldmer,
It's very similar names.
It always trips me up. I'm like, which one was D and which one was T?
Yeah. D is for old. That's how I try to remember.
Right.
But again, a little more morally ambiguous back in time, it seems because the Dwemer were very similar in a different vein, a little less in terms of like praising their potential gods and having religion be at the focus, where they were much more science focused type of thing, but again, pretty morally ambiguous.
Right.
Really, just kind of like whatever we're dealing with, that's fine. We'll just go with that. Morals are for the weak type of deal.
Yeah, yeah. So the way I like to think of it is the Altmer are way more in the we praise the Aedra, because we used to be one and we want to get back there again. So that's them. And then you have the Kymer, who are like, we make deals with Daedra and that went sideways and now we're the Dunmer. And then you have the aliens who are like, we're all in on Daedra. Yes. Gut Gardens, please. Gut Gardens, we're going to enslave humanity and take over the continent. And that did not work out well for them. And then you have the Kymer who are like, Aedra, Daedra, whatever. We've got tonal magic. We're all about science. So you kind of got the spectrum of stuff, right?
Right. It's and that's sort of it. And it's just like each kind of have their connections to each other where they do feel related. Mm-hmm. But they have their own thing that sort of makes them unique.
Right. Oh, and then there's the Bosmer, who are like, we live in the woods. You like Legolas, right? We shoot arrows.
I also like to eat our fallen comrades.
And all of that. Right. So, but the other thing I really want to, before we move on to other stuff, the thing I really want to point out here about the aliens is that the construction of the White Gold Tower in Cyrodiil was alien design. And you come across, and you play Elder Scrolls Oblivion, you come across alien ruins all over the place, you find them in other games as well. But we have to remember that the center of the continent, the most famous of the, well, occupied towers that wasn't one of the ones that was there at the beginning of the world, is the White Gold Tower. And that was made by the aliens and was in operation until, well, I guess the events of Oblivion, and then all of a sudden the dragon fires and all that, and you have that whole situation, things kind of change a little bit.
And so, and it's sort of worth noting that although they're much more like Daedra oriented and a little more religion based in terms of stuff like that, or cultish, however you want to refer to that whole situation, they also did structurally have a lot of there was a lot of, I don't want to say science, but there was a lot of architectural science behind what they did, because to your point, playing through the Elder Scrolls for Oblivion specifically, you're diving into alien ruins constantly,
right?
And they have a very, you know, interesting structure that obviously this was important to them as well. So it wasn't just like wacko cult stuff and nothing else. They did have a structure that kind of had their society in check, even if it did just come at the expense of basically any and all slaves.
It was very cutthroat. Yeah, their society, from what we can tell, is very cutthroat. There was a lot of competition, a lot of politics, but that plays out in a lot of the cultures. So that's to be expected.
That's not unique.
Right, right. And eventually they were deposed by the Alessian Revolt, and the humans took over, and over time wiped a lot of them out in response to the previous attempts of them to enslave and dominate the human population. So, so that's the aliens. That's it's, I mean, I guess it makes sense to be on the iceberg, but there really isn't a whole lot.
I was going to say, it's almost other stuff. To your point, it's fine that they include this on the iceberg, but I mean, it's like, it's the structural design of several of the games. So it's like, well, it's not even really up for debate. It's just part of the series. It's just kind of the minutia involved with their existence. That's kind of like, okay, well, we don't have clear cut answers on all of this stuff,
right?
But they very clearly were here and had a huge influence on the design of the world.
Right. Right. So they were involved with it. Well, hey, let's move on to number 40. This one is interesting. This one is titled Khajiit Are Elves. And you might be wondering, okay, well, Khajiit are elves. No, they're Khajiit. And what does that even mean? Well, there is a very specific reference here to a to an old book. And here, well, let me just read the synopsis here. The Khajiit creation myth explains that the Khajiit and the Bosmer were originally from the same species and were separated into beast folk and elves by Azurah, A-H, we're talking Khajiit deities here, and Ifer, respectively. And the very specific story is, goes like this. I'll read through and then we're going to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
The part, it's a long section, and it shows up in a few different places and different varieties. And, you know, so it's two separate books, and this is from the second one. But anyway, the part that's interesting is, but Nirni soon forgave Lorkhaj, Nirni being existence, the world, or Nir, or Nirn in other mythologies.
The female creator of the world, right, of Nirn.
Like, Anu's spouse, like that, yep, sort of thing. Nirni soon forgave Lorkhan, for Nirni could make children. And she filled herself with children, but cried because her favorite children, the forest people, did not know their shape. Okay, so we're talking like Bosmer lore here.
Yeah, Bosmer ooze-based at this point.
Yeah, but it goes on because the children who didn't know their shape weren't just Bosmer according to this story. Check this out. And Azura came to her and said, "Poor Nirni, stop your tears. Azura makes for you a gift of a new people." And notice the even the way it's phrased sounds like a Khajiit telling the story. Like, stop your tears. Azura makes for you a gift, yes, of new people.
Always in the third person.
Yes. Nirni stopped weeping, and Azura spoke the first secret to the moons, and they parted and let Azura pass. Which is interesting, because the moons are usually associated with Lorkhan's remains, parts of his body, that sort of thing, and we've already mentioned him so far. But it doesn't go into detail there. It continues, and Azura took some forest people who were torn between man and beast, and she placed them in the deserts, or the best desert and forests in Nirni being Tamriel. And Azura, in her wisdom, made them of many shapes, one for every purpose. This is a reference to the different types of Khajiit that
first
you have.
Stock, yep.
The first stocks,
all the different forest stocks.
Yeah. I'm looking. I lost my place. Different shapes. One for every purpose. And Azura named them Khajiit and told them her second secret and taught them the value of secrets. So that's part of why Khajiit are so secretive. And Azura bound the new Khajiit to the lunar lattice, as is proper for Nirni's secret defenders. Then Azura spoke the third secret, and the moons shone down on the marshes, and their light became sugar. Okay, so this is stuff we've talked about with Khajiit lore before. We don't need to go into super detail there, but here's where it gets interesting. But Ifer, or Ifrei, or Yiffer, or however you want to pronounce it.
However you want to pronounce that.
Heard the first secret and snuck in behind Azura. And Ifer could not appreciate secrets, and he told Nirni of Azura's trick. So Nirni made the deserts hot and sands biting, and Nirni made the forests wet and filled with poisons. And Nirni thanked Ifer and let him change the forest people also. And Ifer did not have Azura's subtle wisdom. So Ifer made the forest people elves always and never beasts. And Ifer named them Bosmer. And from that moment, they were no longer the same litter as the Khajiit. So two things here. First, the Bosmer, who are elves, and the Khajiit seem to have come from a common source, according to this myth.
This is phrasing it. It's just like one unified source that's separated.
Right. And so they were originally the same thing, and then they were divided into different things. But also, this explains some of the beast-like qualities of the Bosmer, the fact, mm-hmm, that some of them have horns, and that they seem to be a little bit more animalish than other elves.
Yes, I was going to say they definitely have a different quality, a feral quality about them. Not that, right, they're like feral, but there's just some. They're a mix of different groups than you usually see with elven races. Let's put it that way.
Right. So that also has something to do with the Wild Hunt, mm-hmm, and them kind of going back to this ooze state, this more animalistic, right, state, however, yep, you want to envision
literally
that.
Literally being essentially connected to their surroundings, like as part, right, of who they are, essentially.
Right. So you've got little pieces of this in between those things. So the phrase at the beginning, the iceberg title of this one, Khajiit are elves. It's not so much that the Khajiit are elves as the Khajiit and a type of elf, the Bosmer, may have come from the same source or are connected to the same or similar deities that divided them.
I'm curious what people think, because this one to me was probably the most contentious of the group that we had for this episode when you sent me over, like, we're going to cover these ones and, mm-hmm, like, this is what we're going to get up to on the iceberg. This to me is a little less Khajiit are elves and more Bosmer are beast race.
Right. Yeah. It almost feels like it's the other. Yeah.
It doesn't feel, mm-hmm, like this says much about, nothing about this really seems to say like Khajiit are elves so much as Bosmer might be less elven than we refer to them as.
Right, or elf-shaped something else.
Right. Kind of what this feels like. They're like a hybrid between a beast folk and an elf.
Right. Right.
So like, yeah. So I thought this one was oddly named because I don't really feel it's what it's talking about. It's the same stuff that's being discussed, but the direction of it seems backwards.
Right. And then there's the fact that one of the first docks looks very human-ish.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is another
one from, you know, Arena before they really determined what it was.
Right. Which feels like a retcon, but. I mean, it is a retcon.
Without a doubt, but it's still kind of a fun, like, oh, that's how they explain this and it's type of thing. But yes, so I don't know. To me, this one seems like it's the other way around. This, I think, is more like, are Bosmer actually part beast folk?
Right, right. So yeah, it raises a lot of questions. It also raises more questions about how accurate each of the different species are with understanding where they came from, their origins, sure. All of that. And, you know, like men and elves, they all have different stories and different, right. Where they came from.
When you have this supernatural element that is real and confirmable because you deal with these creatures and Daedra and, you know, Aedra and essentially these gods and demigods in game as like real entities, there's really not any confusion on if they exist or not. But then it's kind of, you get this weird scenario. It's like, okay, well then, if we know these things could happen in this world, mm-hmm. where do you draw mm-hmm. the line on, well, what probably happened based on this writing? Like, well, it's not unrealistic,
right.
But at the same time, you can't necessarily guarantee it unless you kind of see it for yourself in game. And a lot of times they don't give you that. It's, you find the book, you find the interpretation, and so many times they're written from in-game, so you have that draw as well, where it's just like, oh, okay, well, it's got the slant of who's writing it. Why are they writing right. it like this?
Right. And then you have the complication of like, well, everybody's myths can't be accurate at the same time if they contradict each other.
Right.
So now you're right, like they could be real in a world with magic and deities that actually do interact and you can actually see the evidence of them.
Sure.
But at some point there's contradictions. But does something like a dragon break explain it all? Was the
That's
world
exactly it.
In the, then, during the Merithic era or before the Merithic era really just this weird mix of stuff where multiple things actually happened? And then Akatosh is like, okay, well, I'm closing this down.
Yeah, let's
time only moves in one
here.
Direction. Yeah,
right. Because I was going to say that you have that other problem where, you know, magic was a little more untethered back in the Merithic era. So it's like, or at least it seems to be. So it
seems to be. Yeah.
And so that's another situation of like, well, you know, we talk about the rare occurrences of dragon breaks when we've discussed them because it's like, oh man, this could very easily like get very confusing when you're trying to piece this all together. But back when this was a little unmoored, were these things just going everywhere? Like, you
yeah.
know what I mean? It was like, yeah. oh, okay. Well, I was going to say there are dragon breaks every third week of the month. Like you don't really know.
Right yeah, like what how does that work, because that is a possibility, you know.
Right
but
right.
But there you go. So Khajiits are elves, probably not, but maybe they have something in common with Bosmer and there might sure. be more to it. Let's move on to the next one, number 41, the Anuad. This is a weird word. This is basically the creation myth, Anu, Padme,
yeah, it
light,
was like the Anuad,
and but, dark, all, everything coming together, and mm-hmm. And then the competition between them. And we've gone over this.
We've done this in a couple different episodes because yeah. this is sort of like the basis of most creation theory in the series.
Yeah, and many of the different species, races, whatever you want to call them, share elements of this story, but tell yeah. it in slightly different terms.
I was going to say, it's always done within the racial flavor text of the yes. of the people in question, but it's right. mostly the same basic story.
Right, right.
Not so, always, but mostly.
Yeah, so we're not going to explain the whole thing again. We've already done this. Go back and listen to the creation episodes.
Yeah, and again, lots of this that is, stuff. I mean, I guess this is an iceberg thing, but this is just a book in game. Like.
Yeah, but I guess the iceberg is how much of which version of this is accurate.
Right, so that's sort of it. It's like, I guess maybe it's just referring specifically to this scenario of like, okay, well, how much of this do you believe is true or propaganda?
Right, right. Yeah. So there's, and what I find most interesting about this is the most common version of the story is the Imperial version, which is kind of a merger.
An amalgamation of so many of the others.
Right. Of mostly Altmer and Mannish beliefs.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, and this happens in the real world too. This version of their faith, of their belief, is very much more politically motivated than it is based on evidence and fact.
Yeah, and definitely pro-imperial race, so to speak.
Right. And on top of it, they cut certain things out. They leave certain things out. They focus on certain parts more than others. And that leads to something that is by just simply the fact of the way it was created is never going to be 100% accurate.
Right. Yes. Well, again, that's what happens when you have any type of writing is you can be as objective as you possibly can, but it always has a subjective slant no matter what, even if it's not intentional, because it could be just shaped by your experience, even if it's not like intentionally designed. But you and I recounting the same thing might come across as different and likely would just because of what we've lived through independently from each other might just skew slightly how you view something. Same thing said to, you know, the same way can be interpreted two different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Anuad. Let's move on to the next one. Number 42, Sixth House Cults. Okay. This one's definitely more in your
I love
ball
this
court. So this is all about the
good sports reference.
Ball court. That's a thing, right? People put balls in courts. I'm a sports guy. Anyway, you want to talk about this one? So I don't have to talk about sports anymore.
No more sports ball. So I actually love this because I find the sixth house cult in general is never really, I would argue it's never really the focus of much.
Well, let's give people a little bit of foundation here.
Context.
We're talking Morrowind. We're talking Dunmer Houses,
yes,
right? And this is the sixth house of the. There's an episode where we go over all the different Dunmer houses.
In fact,
there's multiple episodes where we went into each of the houses. Well, this is the sixth house. These are the different groups of Dunmer, and you're either from a lineage or you are you work for a specific house because you are part of that. Think of them as like, they're almost like petty kingdoms. They're almost like lordships.
Yeah. If you think of them that way. That's actually, I think, a pretty good way of putting it.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's the sixth house, which is Dagoth Urz, the house of Dagoth, right?
Yes. The house of Dagoth, which is, I would say like, okay, it is your central enemy sort of in Morrowind.
Right.
I would say the Elder Scrolls 3 game Morrowind is what I'm referring to by that.
Right. He's supposed to be the big bad that the Tribunal is against.
Right. But the thing is, like, his house and his existence kind of go beyond just that. Most people or most houses are governed by somebody. You have, you know, Indral and all this stuff, Halalu. The sixth house, which they often will just call the sixth house, they won't even call it like House Dagoth type of deal, is essentially like the bad one of the group. Everybody's freaked out by them. They're much more of a like straight up cult than anything else,
which is saying a lot, because every one of those houses more or less are corrupt in some way, right?
That's fair. So yeah, if you're freaking out the other corrupt groups, you're probably pretty corrupt. But the thing about this house that I personally like love in the story is they are much more supernatural. And it's more than, I mean, there obviously is the political slant to them and stuff, but they are essentially exiled from everyone else. They are, the big thing about them is the creep factor that I love. They're very demonic. They have a lot of, if you ever see their stuff in game, actually, can you, any chance you could quickly pull up their flag?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Their banner.
I'll let me set that up.
Fine. If you can in the background. But they have a very, very dark theme to them. They also seem to be, I want to say corruptible is a great way to put it, because when you get the call of House Dagon, it literally, it feels like you're destined to be in the house as opposed to some of the others. It's like, oh, well, I chose to go with them because I'm, you know, I'm big into trade. Like, yeah, I want my money. Hilalu's calling for me type of thing. And it's like, okay, this is what resonates you with you for this. Mm-hmm. And the thing about House Dagoth, Clan Dagoth, whatever, they seem much more like it is intrinsically like in their blood that they become part of this. The big thing is the ties to music, which we've touched on throughout several episodes, where there's this like musical connection throughout the series.
Mm-hmm. Tonal architecture.
Too, yeah. And they have a lot of situations and stories and quests that you relate to. ESO and Morrowind specifically, you'll get into a lot of. It's like this heartbeat, like you hear the heartbeat of Lorcan that kind of like pulses and like drives these
summons
people.
Them sort of thing.
Correct. And then as a side effect, it often causes them to kind of go crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've got this picture up on the screen.
Okay. Beautiful. Right there. It's just like compared to some of the other ones, it's just got like a creepy vibe to it.
It's got like the scarabs on it. It's like a brown with a red, with the writing is red on top of brown.
Which
it's
is saying dark. Something because yeah. I'm looking at the other house banners I have on my wall. Unfortunately, you don't see them because it's sort of on the wall facing my stream setup so that I see it as opposed to the wall behind me. But I have the house banners up on my wall. Mm-hmm. And it's like, even by comparison, I would agree with you. It's sort of got like a dark feel to it. But their big thing and why they were, you know, obviously considered like the black sheep of the great houses was their, essentially they're labeled traitors. You know,
right.
And treason is one of the few kind of universal things in Morrowind that nobody is okay with. When you're branded traitors, you're on the outs with everybody. So you get that side effect. So they're essentially the outcasts of the area.
And their leader does terrible things in order to gain power and
try to dominate everybody. That goes again with a lot of the corruption aspect. You get the ascended sleepers and all of the stuff in the events of Morrowind, which we're not going to recap all of that. But the blight coming down, it's literally just a giant poison cloud corrupting things. It's hard to find that to have a lot of redeeming qualities, but it's just like from their perspective, this blight is purifying people, and it's like, oh great, perfect cult speak. This is purifying you through this, and it's like, oh boy, okay, yes, everybody's covered in pustules because they're so pure now. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Rob the Princess in chat says traitors to whom? To the other Dunmer, to Dunmer society.
Traitors to essentially all the other Dunmer is what is considered because they're blamed regardless of story. They're sort of with Dagoth being in Red Mountain, and I want to actually reference briefly that it's like in the Elder Scrolls Arena, it was actually Cave Dagoth. It was actually just a cave named Dagoth, which is kind of interesting. But like, he's essentially considered the traitor to most. Well, it was him that stabbed Indoril Nerevar, and he wanted the power, and it's just like, it seemed like no matter what, yes, the power corrupts him being at the heart,
but is that story true? Is the Tribunal now using that as a scapegoat reason for their own claim to power and all of that, right?
But it's why it's kind of a good thing Rob brought that up, because it makes it so that no matter what the scenario, either he was the traitor in the scenario and actually killed Indril Nerevar, okay, well, that's pretty bad. Or he wasn't, so the dissident priests are correct, and so we've got Vivek and Amalexia, and so Thassil is the problem, except being at the crater ends up getting hyper-corrupted and causing all these problems anyways, so no matter what, he's
He's either a convenient scapegoat or he was actually the bad guy.
Correct. There's right. no scenario
yeah.
where he comes out not looking like a problem.
Right, right. Well, here,
and as a result, his house is cast aside and comes with a lot of problems.
Yeah, so if we read through just the very beginning section of the UESP, this kind of encapsulates a good portion of this.
Sure.
But so House Dagoth, also called Clan Dagoth, the Sixth House, Shadow House, Sleeping House, Lost House, Traitor House, House of Lord Dagoth, and the Tribe Unmourned, or Unmourned House, so many different titles, is the defunct Sixth Great House of the Khymer, led by Vorin Dagoth, later known as Dagoth Ur. The Lost Clan's ancient homeland was swallowed up by what is now Vardenfell, being the only great house to have their capital, Kogoran, something like that.
I think it's Kogoran. Wow.
Korgoran.
Kogoran is what I've always said, but I have no idea if that's actually what the writers intend for it to be said.
Right. There was a lot of reading in Morrowind, not a whole lot of voice acting.
Sure was. There's not nearly as much dialogue.
Located in the region. In the First Age, House Dagoth betrayed the other great houses and allied with the Dwemer during the War of the First Council, though some sources claim they fought against the Dwemer, being branded a traitor house and was destroyed for their treason. All records of the house's existence were destroyed following the Battle of Red Mountain, and its members were either killed or absorbed into the remaining houses. Unbeknownst to all, Lord Dagoth had survived and spent centuries slowly building his strength and influence from within Red Mountain. This culminated in Dagoth's attempt to recreate the Dwemer god construct Numidium in order to overthrow the Tribunal and conquer Morrowind. In the Third Era, 427, Dagoth Ur was slain, and his plans halted with the destruction of the Heart of Lorcan by the Nerevarine. So this, I mean, it's complex. There's a lot of stuff, and it goes way back in time. But there you go. That's basically it. And the reason why this is on the list is because there's a whole lot of shady stuff going on, and what the actual truth of this situation, we don't really know.
Right. The other thing that I want to, we're not going to delve into this, but it's one of the ones that I just want to bring up in relation to House Dagoth specifically. Shoot, let me get the exact name of it. The book series, it's seven parts, it looks like. I remember being several. I thought it was five, but it looks like seven. It's a book series called Poison Song. It's about the call of this heartbeat that I was talking about that kind of drives people to their house. And the reason I figure it's worth mentioning, yes, they executed a lot of House Dagoth, but the thing that I thought was interesting is that some of them were kind of just like assimilated into the other houses, like you mentioned.
Right, yeah.
The basis of Poison Song is some of the, well, one specific person who is assimilated into another house kind of feels the pull that it's like, oh, I'm not part of this house. And he's like so drawn just spiritually yeah. back to his roots, and that's why I find them to be interesting, because they seem like they have a supernatural influence compared to the others, where it's like, no, once House Dagoth, always House Dagoth, mm-hmm. where that doesn't seem to have that same situation with the other houses. It seems more like a choice and a bloodline of like, well, no, you do this because that's what your heritage says you should, whereas this is like, no, you're destined to be this. Like,
right, right.
You got the crazies. They just haven't shown up yet.
Something's in the blood, or there's some sort of curse or something
right,
like that.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
So check out Poison Song. It's a really good read. It's a good one.
Yeah. It might be worth covering in a future episode.
Yeah, we could always do an episode on Poison Song if people were interested in it. But it's actually one of the ones that I really like in the series, because it's a full like mini novel series. It's a full story.
Yeah, we get a few of those in, like, this is one of those things you get used to in the games where it's like, oh, this is a book, and it's like three pages or four
yeah,
pages.
Yeah. This is the, like a
yeah,
book. Like, right. This is a legitimate book.
Right, right. Yeah, there's a few of those in the series that are just way long. All right, so that's number 42. I feel like there's something universal about just being a human being in the 21st century and struggling with weight. I know it's something that I've had to deal with, and I go in and out of exercising more and having a better diet, and then I ruin it by eating more pizza and tacos and whatever else. And I know I'm not the only one who feels this way. And diet and exercise are great, but sometimes you need a little bit more. You can lose 20% more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise with Wegovy at Hims. It regulates your appetite so you eat less, and Wegovy is the first ever GLP-1 pill for weight loss, so there's no needles. You can get everything through Hims, so it all happens online. You'll be connected with a licensed provider who helps determine if this is the right treatment for you, and if you're prescribed, your medication is delivered directly to your front door. No insurance is necessary. There's a range of GLP-1 options, and they give you a lot of extra support with 24/7 messaging, team care, in-app lifestyle and nutrition support, recipes and meal plans. They're not just going to sell you the product. They're going to support you and make sure that you do what is right for you. So are you ready to reach your goals? Visit hims.com/scrollslore to get a personalized, affordable plan that gets you. That's hims.com/scrollslore. hims.com/scrollslore. Weight loss by Hims is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit hims.com. Let's talk about number 43. This will be the last one for this episode. There aren't actually 7,000 steps. The title is not actually 7,000 steps. What is this a reference to? Well, Hi Hrothgar doesn't actually have 7,000 steps in the game. Big surprise.
Like, yeah. This one's funny just because it's like, yep, that's right. The Xbox 360 did have limitations.
Yeah. So, okay. So this piece of the iceberg goes back at least 15 years to a Reddit post, which you can still read. And I will read to you right here. It is by Jimmy, J-I-M-E-E-E, posted on the Skyrim subreddit. And the title is, there are only 748 steps to High Hrothgar. Yeah, I counted.
That's my favorite part about this. It's like, yeah, no, I counted them.
This guy is like, all right, I'm gonna start at the bottom and just count all the way up. Yep. Nope, not 7,748. So this is the post. Boredom and curiosity got the better of me, so I set out on this epic quest. Please note, this topic is in jest. Skyrim is awesome, and I won't be taking it back to the store after this shocking discovery. My studies are as follows. Counted only the steps that were actually visible. Much of the terrain leads you to believe that many steps are buried under the snow, which is true. There's
that
sections.
That is 100%. Sure.
So if you want to take that into account, then I would estimate 100 or 150 more steps that were not visible. I counted the steps that went downhill too. The lore talks about climbing the 7,000 steps, so it seemed counterintuitive, but I included them anyway. Started from the very first step over the Iverstead Bridge right up to the front door of High Hrothgar. So in closing, if the Throw of the World was to really include 7,000 steps, our journey up to the Greybeards would have been roughly 10 times longer. I suppose you can also say the mountain itself should be about 10 times bigger. Crazy if it was that big in the game. Also, Todd Howard is a lying bastard. Not my words. Jimmy's words. We know why that is, because none of the things in Skyrim are to scale.
And they didn't have 24 times the detail at the time.
Oh my god, yes, true. Yes. But like the cities would have been like way bigger, distances absolutely. Between things would have been way bigger. And
do you think of how many mountain trolls you would actually have to fight?
Oh my god. The 7,000 steps. 10 times. Ten times the number.
10 times the troll.
Right. Also, the mountains would be like 10 times higher. You know.
Yeah.
So, Oh my god. And it makes me wonder if you were to like measure the mountain, and I'm sure somebody has a YouTube video somewhere where they took the actual assets of the game and figured out, okay, like this is a foot, this is an inch, this is a meter,
like how tall
whatever.
Would this actually be?
Right. Like this is High Hrothgar. It's supposed to be the tallest peak in Tamriel. How high is it? And what does that compare to in the real world? I would imagine it's probably smaller than mountains in the real world.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I bet it would probably be like a couple hills in my town by comparison. Right. But again, it'll suspend some disbelief when you're dealing with the limitations of technology for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it still feels like a lot. You start at the bottom, you work your way up, and it's still 700. That's still a lot of steps.
That's a lot of steps. You ever try walking up 700 steps? That's like going up and down the stadium, like a stadium, like several times. It's not going to be pleasant.
Yeah. Yeah,
if each step, Spartan race,
I wonder what the math is.
Two jugs, and right. It was a miserable experience, and all we had to do was go up and down once.
Right. So, okay. So let's do a little breakdown. A step is what, roughly 6 inches?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So half a foot?
Half a foot.
Okay. So half a foot. So 0.5 times 748 would be 374 feet.
Okay. 374. Okay.
Yeah. 374 feet. That's not very tall.
No, not for a mountain.
Not for a mountain. Yeah. Not for a mountain. There you go. That's it. Seven thousand steps. So again, we're still at the early stages of the iceberg. That one's kind of funny, kind of silly.
I found that one very funny. I mean, I knew about that one in advance. Like that wasn't I discovered it when we were prepping for the iceberg stuff because some of these I've never heard of. Mm-hmm. That one I've known is kind of funny. Where it's just like, dude, there's only this many steps. It's like, well, yes,
yes. I mean, it makes sense in retrospect. It's like, yeah, no, obviously there is, you know, and this happens in other ways in games too, where they'll say like, oh, well, the distance from this city to that city is however many thousand miles or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I get that in the lore it's that much, but you can walk from one to the other in less than 10 minutes.
Right. That's the problem, is there's the balance between quote unquote realism mm-hmm. and fun. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest things that I do always find funny is Cyrodiil in ESO is still condensed. Like,
right.
it's been
right.
condensed in every game, but it's still condensed. And people complain so much about how long it takes to get from one keep to another because they're like, oh my God, you got to run so far. And I was like, yeah, imagine if it was like the real size.
Yeah.
You'd be there all day. There was a game that actually I think did a pretty good job with scale, not to get too off topic, but there was a game called Planetside 2. Mm-hmm. I have no idea if they're still active.
I don't think so.
You would spend like 5 minutes driving from one base to another,
right,
just to mm-hmm. try to reach them. And it's like, even when you think about that, it's like, okay, well, if you're playing on a continent, that's still condensed, and people are like, oh my God, everything's so far away. And it's like, well, yes, that's why it was like days journey. Like, you don't want to actually travel for days. It's going to get boring.
Right. Right. Well, Daggerfall is a good example of like why you don't want to do that. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you could just head off into the wilderness because the game is massive, but you're just going to find a lot more trees and just more monsters over and over and over again.
There's just not stuff every 5 inches of note. It can be pretty to look around, but it's like,
yeah. And I think this is to Bethesda's credit and Todd's credit, the design team behind Skyrim, I think, and even Oblivion, they nailed the scale of the distance between things that are interesting to go see.
Yes.
Like, if you are just wandering in the wilderness, there are every minute, there's something that you can pass by that makes you go, oh, what's here? What is this? And scale, it works.
It's big enough to feel huge, but small enough to still feel engaging.
Right, because you're constantly coming across interesting points that have different things to take note of. And sometimes it's a dungeon. Sometimes it's just like, oh, there's a, you know, I don't know, an altar in the middle of the forest and you've got some sort of monster there or something.
There's some stones in a weird pattern. Like, oh, what does this mean? Like, it doesn't, it's a little lake you can look in, like, type of thing. It's like, oh, cool. And there was like a helmet at the bottom or whatever.
And it's one of the reasons why, like, Starfield, I think, had issues when you went to go explore a moon or whatever. And it's like, they made it more accurate to the way the real world works in that. Yes. If you're going to explore a barren moon, there's not going to be much there.
Probably nothing there.
Right. So, yeah, that doesn't create as much fun from a, like, I'm playing a traditional RPG standpoint, but it is a little bit more accurate. And I think they found that people would rather have fun than accuracy.
Well, yes. And I mean, that's a thing. Unfortunately, sometimes people think they know what they want and they don't actually.
Or a very small percentage of people actually wanted that.
That could also be true as well. But oftentimes, bigger doesn't necessarily always mean better.
That's what I keep telling my wife. Anyway. that's going to do it for the icebreaker for this week. We're going to take a quick break, and we've got some patrons to thank and some other stuff in the random UESP page. So we'll be back in just a minute. Don't go anywhere.
This is Hamish Morak. Dragonborn, you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls lore cast.
I have too many tabs open. We got lots of stuff to talk about on this episode.
I hate when I do that.
Here, I found it. I found the Patreon tab. Patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast if you'd like to help us out. If we make your day better, then toss us a little bit of money and get some ad-free episodes or a bunch of other stuff. Also, we have our patron chat coming up next week, and there's time to sign up still.
It's really the end of the month already?
Yeah, it's the 21st as we record this. It'll be the 28th in a week, which is the last Thursday of the month. So we'll be getting together with our patrons at 8 or 9 p.m. Eastern on the 28th. And also, you've got plenty of time to join us and even suggest a topic. If there's something you would like to discuss, then come join us. Patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Also, I've got to shout out all of our Daedric Princes. Kira C, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Peter R, Austin B, and Mintaka, thank you for your continued support. And to all 118 of our current paying patrons, we really do appreciate it. And we also love our free patrons as well, the ones who just sign up to make sure they get little notifications. Yeah. And sometimes giveaways. Sometimes we'll drop stuff on there. So that's fun. So thank you to all of you. And if you'd like to help out in other ways, share the show with a friend or leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read those out on future episodes. And you can also leave some nice comments on Spotify or on YouTube if you watch on YouTube. Any of that stuff's helpful. Lotus, you want to share some stuff before we do the random UESP page? I've got it ready right here.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a new episode of Tales that came out at the start of the week. We had mentioned that we were going to be diving more into the Night Market gameplay as opposed to our last episode here.
Where we Dude, I saw the clip of you trying to save everybody and then you got mauled.
Yeah, that was due to popular demand of the people I was playing with putting that out, because the clip just ends with everybody like laughing at me maniacally because instead of clutching the scenario, I was eaten by a tremor scale.
Yeah, I think your quote was something like, "Don't worry, I've got you." And then the it just comes out of the bottom of the screen from the view, and then you say, "Oh my effing god!"
Yeah. There's a lot of it. It is not safe for work. Like,
nope.
Most of my outside this podcast specifically, most of my stuff is not exactly safe for work stuff.
He's just living on the edge all the time.
Yeah, I've tried to get better since having a kid, but I'm doing. And we'll see how well that goes. But I'm trying. What do you call it? But so it was fun in the Night Market. People have said that at the time it was just very funny timing. It's just some of the goofy stuff that happens in the Night Market. And I was just casually picking people up and everybody was just sort of like, yeah, no, Lotus is resing people. And then I'm just eaten entirely. It's boom, just a mechanic where this giant Dune Ripper can just eat you and came right out and destroyed me. So. If you're interested in Night Market gameplay stuff, we really kind of dive into it with me, Ark and Promethean on Tales of Tamriel, just diving in all the fun we've been having with it. We've been continuing to have more people join for our Sunday night runs, which we'll be doing yet again at 8 p.m. Eastern on the PlayStation North American server. I'm glad that people have been having fun. Some people have told me that they've tried soloing some of the stuff and they were very limited on what they could see. And they're like, just running around with you guys, they were like, I sort of still didn't know what I was doing, but we had such a overwhelming force. They were kind of like, I got to see all this extra stuff because there's just so many of you. You're just like overwhelming things. So it was like, that's the idea.
That's how you do it.
It's fun because like, if we're ever short on people, we just open up Group Finder. Some people actually, funny enough, we had a full group and we actually had several people who, since we were in a full group, were actually just trailing along with our group, just running alongside us. So we were actually like a group of 16 instead of 12.
right.
And so it's a lot of fun. And I definitely hear people saying like, I really wish I could solo it. This is just not a thing you can... You actually can solo it. I did try, but it's more so you need to solo as in you need to follow other people around or really be good at stealth to just run away from stuff to do objectives. Don't feel like you're barging in. The more the merrier. We're having a lot of fun with it. And we'd love to have you join, even if it's for like a half an hour. There's no commitment needed. It's easy to jump in and collect keys and blow stuff up until people sign off. Usually it goes for what I've been told is about 2 to 3 hours after I eventually go to bed. So like, it's not even like I'm the only one running the thing. So everybody in the group is happy to have people join.
Nice. All right. Well, go check that out and check out Tales of Tamriel if you want to hear those stories, because I'm sure they're a lot of fun to hear. Also, you can check out my shows. I, of course, run the Robots Radio network of shows, and so they're not all my shows, but I do have other shows, of course, the Fallout Lorecast, Lord of the Rings Lorecast, and Retro Recall. We've been going through all the early Mario games and reviewing those, and coming up next are some of the hardest, most terrible games ever, and we're going to do a whole month of those, and it has been torturous. So you're going to want to hear us suffer. That'll be a lot of fun. People like torture. Also, if you're thinking about starting a podcast and you want some help, we have the Rocket Club. That we started a specific thing in order to mentor new creators and help them launch their shows. So go check that out, robotsradio.net. So that's all my stuff. But here, let's talk about our random UESP page.
It's extra random.
This is pretty random. It's from Morrowind, but it's a mod. It's a Morrowind mod. So here's the category. Mod/Morrowind Tamriel Data Alchemy Items Ingredients.
All right.
We're way down the rabbit hole in this one.
All right. Tell me we're not eating ebony or glass.
No. Okay, good. But Tamriel Data : Orc's Blood. Orc's Blood is ? This needs more help, I guess. Somebody needs to add this in. Guaranteed samples can be found in the following locations, and it lists places where you can find samples of orc's blood. Orc's blood is worth 50 gold, weighs 0.1. Do you want to guess what the alchemical effects of orc's blood are?
Orc's blood? Because you said this is a mod, you said?
It's under the mod category.
Okay.
So,
because I was like, I don't remember orc's blood in Morrowind, but
I think
it's
it was something added in as like an alchemical for ingredient for being able to mix different kinds of potions.
All right, it's gonna increase your strength.
Yes, fortify strength, the second one. That's 2 of 4. What else does it do? All right,
it's gonna fortify your health.
Nope.
Damn.
No health.
It's
three strikes, you're out.
It's going to lower your intelligence.
Nope. That sounds racist.
That was super just a jab at Rob.
Sorry, Rob. All right, one more and you're out.
Does it get you back some fatigue or endurance? I guess I don't know how you'd phrase it in that game, because fatigue is like no.
Yeah, right. nothing like that. So, all right.
Man, I got off to a great start with picking the first one.
Right, you got the first one. Fortify strength. Yeah. Okay. So the other positive one is the third one, shield. It has some sort of shielding quality. The first one is drain speed, so that's a negative. And then the fourth is drain magicka. So it slows you down, makes you stronger, shields you, and then
so
takes your magic away.
So it makes you worse at magic. It just doesn't make you objectively stupid. So I was on the right track with that one.
Close. But yeah, you would use it in a spell or a potion to say, like, you know, make somebody not be able to cast spells at you or something.
Right. Yeah. But it's not making them stupider. Okay. Right, all right. Fair. Right.
Robin chat says, I heard that, Lotus.
The speed one, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a mod. Know. Somebody just made it.
It's just random things. Yeah. I was trying to base it on like, okay, what are benefits you get from being an orc?
Right. Like, yeah. I think you were right. Like when I read through this, I was like, oh, I can see why people would come up with this. Like you're a bigger kind of guy. So you might be slower, but you're stronger. You use shields. They don't cast magic spells as much, you know?
Right.
Okay.
See, when I think of shield, I'm also thinking of a magic shield as opposed to like,
yeah, and I think that's probably what the.
Here, I know, let me click, which let me is click on that. Kind of funny because it's like,
it increases the target's armor rating. So it's shield. Actually increases your armor.
Oh.
So okay, like you can drink a potion with this, and then you at your armor level. It's like your skin would become stronger.
Okay,
more resilient.
That's pretty funny. I wouldn't have thought of that as a status effect, but that's actually pretty. Okay, yeah, no, I'm on board with this. I like this.
Pretty weird. All right, so there you go. That's the random page for the week. That's going to do it for us. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here as part of our Twitch chat, twitch.tv/robotsradio. And we'll be back next week with our patrons talking about whatever they decide they want to talk about. So join us for that. And until then, drink some orc's blood and fortify your strength or lose some speed. We'll see you next time.
Why not all?
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more.
Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.